Good morning. We'll go ahead and get started. Good morning, everyone. Apologize for the delay. We've had some traffic issues and we'll have some people coming in as we get started. But we'll call to order at 9:15, a special call meeting regarding the Boston Consulting Group's strategic plan, animal services. As you can see, I am not Mike Rollins. He is absent today. Monica Alonzo will be in a little bit later, but until then, I am the Dak Prescott of the council meeting this morning. Yeah. So we'll go ahead and we'll start with the invocation, and then we'll have our Pledge of Allegiance by Ms. Jennifer Gates. Giving our invocation is Pastor Ben Brown from the Trinity Church, Dallas. Pastor Ben Rounds is Associate Pastor of C3 Trinity Church in Uptown Dallas, District 4, Kingston. He oversees the church's membership process, leadership development, and is a small group minister. C3 Trinity Church has been a part of the fabric of the Uptown area for over 20 years. Under the leadership of Pastor Joe and Nancy Martin, C3 Trinity works with many local organizations to serve and support the city of Dallas. Prior to becoming a pastor, Pastor Ben worked in construction in the construction management industry at Manhattan Construction Company for almost 10 years. He's a graduate of U.S. Naval Academy, George Mason University, and Dallas Theological Seminary. He is married to Melissa, and they are celebrating 11 years in September. Congratulations. They have two sons, Jacob 5 and Joshua, age 2. Pastor Rounds. Please stand.
Let's pray. Father God, today we are grateful to live in the great city of Dallas, and we recognize the blessings of peace, prosperity, and freedom you have given this city, the state of Texas, and the United States of America. For these blessings and for others beyond our ability to count, we give you thanks. Lord, we also come before you today painfully aware of the challenges that lie before us, as individuals, as communities, and together as a city. We face challenges that will require more wisdom, more patience, and more grace than we possess. And so we ask you, our Father, give us your wisdom to know right from wrong. Give us your patience for those who frustrate and disagree with us. And give us grace for one another. Grace to see what unites us rather than what divides us. Grace to put others before ourselves. Grace to love others the way you love us. Lord, today we ask for your blessing on each of our elected representatives. Give them the strength and courage to tackle the difficult task of leading their fellow citizens through the best of times and through the worst of times. And in everything we do, help us, Lord, to honor and please you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Okay, well, at this point, we'll go ahead and get started with our highly anticipated Paige Turner, our animal report. I want to introduce our chair of the Animal Advisory Commission, Mr. Peter Broski. Take it away.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Wilson. Thank you to the City Council. Good morning, and I appreciate the opportunity to present this our findings on this issue, particularly given that this is the second day in a row of special meetings. We appreciate you squeezing us in before the budget. I'm just going to make a couple of introductory remarks and turn it over to BCG. When I became the chair of the Animal Advisory Commission, I realized that the issue of loose dogs was particularly complex because our community couldn't even agree on a set of facts about the situation. Is there a problem, and if so, how large? Couldn't agree on priorities, animal welfare or public safety. And even those who agreed on the facts and the priorities often couldn't agree on what the best strategy would be to address them. So the purpose of this study has been to, one, establish the facts, two, recommend strategies to accomplish both public safety and animal welfare, and three, get our city government, animal organizations, and citizens all working together to accomplish the same strategy. Now, I realize that for people who've been living with the loose dog issue in their community, the facts in this report will not be new news. And for animal and community advocates, the recommendations will not be new news. But the report is valuable because it can align us all and offers a very clear and executable blueprint for how to solve the issue if we're all willing to take the necessary steps. I want to thank the BCG team, which put in well over 3,000 hours doing this work, for making this contribution to our community at a 80% discount to what they would normally be paid. I want to thank the generous funders, many of whom are here today, for providing the funds to make it happen. And most importantly, I really want to thank the city and DAS staff who gave BCG unfettered access to the data they needed and really cleared every roadblock to make this happen. So now I'm now going to turn it over to Dylan Bolden, who's the managing partner of the Dallas office of BCG, and he is joined by Stephen Edison, who really ran the project day-to-day, and his partner, Keith Melker.
Thank you. Just very briefly before I hand it over to Stephen, I just wanted to say BCG was very very happy to work on such an important topic for the great city of Dallas. It's a very serious topic, as the report and findings will show, both from a public safety and an animal welfare perspective. We're very excited about the recommendations and the facts that we put on the table. And you should know we put the full effort of our firm behind this work. We've worked six full-time consultants working on this for the past 3 months. We're going to go through the presentation rather quickly, just so we leave more time for question and answer. So we've got a lot of data to work through. But before I hand it over to Stephen, I do want to say thank you to Peter Brodsky, who's been a great partner and collaborator through this, through council members who we've spent quite a bit of time with, the Department of Code Compliance, DAS employees, Animal Shelter Commission, multiple rescue organizations across the city, and then also, obviously very many Dallas residents have been a part of this. I think what's exciting to us is just the level of collaboration and cooperation we've had as we put together this report. So I'll hand it over to Stephen.
Thank you. Today we'll cover four key topics. We'll quickly review the context of our project. We'll review the facts. In this section, we'll go quite quickly, as we've already reviewed many of these with the community. We'll then focus the majority of our time on our recommendations and conclude with recommended next steps. Context. In June 2016, BCG was engaged on behalf of the City of Dallas to suggest solutions to address both public safety and animal welfare. Our assignment was to understand the supply of dogs in Dallas, to understand the community's priorities, learn from best practices from other cities, prioritize solutions that could be helpful for Dallas, and ultimately create a strategic plan for the community of Dallas. Our scope was constrained in three ways. We only focused on the dog population, we did not address animal cruelty, and our focus was on the path forward, not on a detailed account of historical events. To understand this topic, we engaged in four activities. We interviewed countless stakeholders, over 100 in Dallas, and 40 across the nation in benchmark cities. We conducted deep data analysis, specifically using the shelters database and other public sources of data. We conducted our own primary research, executing a census, surveys, and ride-alongs with animal service officers, and we leveraged available secondary research from national organizations. The Dallas dog issue can be conceptualized as buckets of flows.
Would you bring your mic a little closer, please?
Yes. The Dallas dog system can be conceptualized as buckets and flows. If a bucket is all of the dogs in Dallas, it's continually refilled as new dogs are born. From this bucket, certain owners surrender their dogs to DAS, which has its own capacity in its own bucket. Other buckets fall through the cracks, becoming loose, community, runaway dogs. This population collectively poses a public safety risk. These dogs are collected either through animal services officers or through citizens, and oftentimes also taken to DAS, which strains its capacity. The bottom of this are the dogs that are released into positive outcomes, which provides relief from that capacity. The reason this issue is difficult to fix is because single actions create unintended consequences. If we just pick up all the dogs in bucket five, those dogs would quickly be replaced by new breeding, and in the short term, we would have a spike in euthanasia as the shelter's capacity is tested. If we just spayed and neutered all of the dogs, there would still be dogs on the street in bucket five. Effectively, a real solution involves multiple actions across the system at the right level of intensity. The following section, a review of the key facts we identified. We will go through this section quickly, and we're happy to return to these slides in our Q&A. At an executive level, what we found is that Dallas Animal Services plays a very important role in the Dallas community, responding to 311 requests and also as the city's open admission shelter. Each year, it receives 50,000 service requests, takes in 20,000 dogs, and serves 100,000 customers. DAS has made important improvements since 2011, specifically in the areas of shelter operations and LRR, and they've done this while being historically underfunded relative to peer cities. At the same time, we observed a number of urgent public safety issues facing Dallas residents, which we'll walk through in the coming pages, as well as continued opportunities to improve animal welfare and opportunities to improve organization and communication. We'll walk through each of these details in the slides that follow. Dallas is home to 350,000 dogs. In northern Dallas, about 80% of these dogs are spayed or neutered. In southern Dallas, about 85% are intact. This leaves southern Dallas with the potential to grow quite quickly as these dogs reproduce. Two things prevent the population in southern Dallas from growing out of control. The dotted line with the circles represents the potential growth rate if the community stops doing anything to prevent the growth of intact dogs in southern Dallas. The two things that reduce this today are DAS picking up dogs in southern Dallas and nonprofit organizations spaying and neutering dogs in southern Dallas. This reduces a potential 15% growth rate down to an actual 4% growth rate, but the population of intact dogs in southern Dallas is still growing, and more actions will be necessary to reduce this population. BCG conducted a census to understand how many of these dogs are loose dogs. We observed 135 dogs along 176 miles in southern Dallas. We observed just one dog along 59 miles driven in northern Dallas. Extrapolating these observations based on third-party approaches suggests 8,700 loose dogs are in southern Dallas on a given morning. This does not provide us any inclination as to whether this problem is getting better or worse. This is a first-time estimate that could be replicated in the future to assess a trend. We next looked at bites. Through manual data entry of bite records, BCG determined that bites are growing at 15% annually, and bites attributed to loose owns dogs are growing faster at 23% annually. This highlights the public safety risk on our streets. Within the shelter, this chart shows the sources of dogs coming into the shelter. In green are the sources coming in from the field. In blue are the sources which are the dogs that are dropped off at the DAS shelter. What you see here is that field intake has fallen approximately 4% annually since 2011. OTC intake has grown 2.5% annually. Compared to peer cities, DAS's animal service officers, DAS has more animal service officers, but there is less dog intake per animal service officer. Specifically, DAS has about 45% more animal service officers than other comparable cities, but each animal service officer brings in 20% fewer dogs per animal service officer. This could be a result of policy, animal service officer tenure, equipment, or other conflicts of interest. Animal service officers do not just pick up dogs. About 80% of their time is spent responding to 311 calls, in addition to proactive patrols and shelter duties. specific to 311 calls, all calls are categorized and prioritized from 1 to 8. About 40% of calls are categorized as a priority 8, and these calls are not dispatched. This includes loose dog sightings in non-care areas. There is logic here in not responding, in that the response timeline is 7 to 30 days, and it makes little sense to respond to a loose dog sighting 7 days later. DAS also issues citations related to our animal ordinances. The number of citations issued have grown 7% monthly, but only 56% of these receive a response. This chart shows the outcomes of all dogs entering the DAS shelter. In 2011, 70% of dogs entering the shelter were euthanized. This number has consistently fallen to 37% over the last 12 months as positive outcomes have grown. Part of increasing the positive outcomes has been increasing the transfer relationships. Today, DAS partners with approximately 140 transfer organizations to which they send dogs to. About their top 10 partners account for 70% of these transfers. Their smallest 90 partners pull just 2 dogs per year. BCG also executed a survey of rescue organizations throughout Dallas. Of the 60 organizations surveyed, we identified 3 of the largest organizations have annual intake of about 20,000 dogs per year. The other 55 have annual intake of about 10% or 10,000 dogs per year. Of the top 3 rescues in Dallas or the Dallas area, they're pulling just 2% of their dogs from DAS, 98% from other sources. When it comes to funding, historically DAS has been underfunded relative to peer cities. In the 3 orange bars in the middle, however, you see that over the last few years, funding has increased each year, and the proposed $1.5 million increase this year would exceed peer cities. Other cities also augment their funding through close contractual partnerships with a large-scale partner. DAS has the opportunity to augment its municipal funding with partnership through such an organization, similar to what's seen in other cities, where other cities have up to 75% greater budgets in principle by forming these partnerships. Finally, we believe that DAS's organizational structure has negatively impacted its ability to execute its missions across resourcing, communication, execution, and accountability, and we will revisit our recommendations on this topic. We will now review BCG's recommendations on how to address these issues seen across public safety, animal welfare, organization, and communication. BCG is making 7 recommendations for the City of Dallas. The first is to publicly adopt a mission statement that balances both public safety and animal welfare, and to track that mission statement through a scorecard. Initiatives 2, 3, and 4 are designed to fix the problem on a sustainable basis. Initiative 2 recommends increasing field intake up to the total of all loose dogs and increasing the related enforcement and education to prevent dogs from roaming. Initiative 3 is to increase the number of positive outcomes for Dallas dogs, euthanizing only the sickest animals. Behind this initiative are a series of opportunities across transfer relationships, adoption programs, and other programs that would bring more dogs to positive outcomes. Initiative 4 provides the sustainable change to these recommendations to provide approximately 46,000 low-cost spay and neuter surgeries in southern Dallas each year for the next 3 years. This is the only recommendation that both addresses public safety and animal welfare, in that spayed and neutered dogs are less aggressive, less likely to roam, and also prevent future population growth. Recommendations 5, 6, and 7 will help enable this change. Recommendation 5 is to create a collaborative community of partners. We recognize that this is a large plan that cannot be accomplished by a single organization, and a community of partners will be necessary to achieve it. Recommendation 6 is to make animal services a priority within the city government, specifically by making it an independent department with additional funding. And recommendation 7 is to ensure efficiency by measuring outcomes and increasing volunteers. Behind these 7 recommendations are 28 specific initiatives. Each of these can be delegated to an individual and provide more tactical guidance on the next steps to achieve these overarching results. Additional details on each of these is provided in the appendix or in the working materials we've provided to the community. Not all of these initiatives need to be started or executed at the same time, and the city can employ a phased approach to improvement. Here we've laid out a structure which balances effort against impact, where we suggest starting with immediate actions, moving on to quick wins, medium-term initiatives, to strategic priorities, and then to the long-term opportunities. We believe these recommendations will fix the problem for Dallas by reducing the number of loose dog bites and reducing the levels of euthanasia. By increasing field intake, we will reduce the number of loose dogs. And loose dogs account for about 60% of all bites in 2015. And by increasing spay and neuter, we will address the higher risk dogs, where intact male dogs typically account for 70 to 75% of all bites nationally. We also think that our series of opportunities to increase positive outcomes will reduce euthanasia, as well as the spay and neuter efforts to reduce the long-term levels of intake. These solutions will require incremental funding, both from the city and from the private community. If we walk across this chart today, DES has a budget of $10.2 million. We're recommending an incremental $300,000 for field collection. There is additional money to be spent that's already budgeted for here in simply filling the available positions. Beyond that, there's an additional $8 million recommended per year for spay and neuter. About $7 million of this will be for a surge effort over 3 years, which will provide those 46,000 surgeries. The additional $700,000 would support the spay and neuter of more animals being placed through positive outcomes. $1.3 million in funding covers positive outcomes. This covers additional FTEs, additional one-time costs, and FTEs and other costs. An additional $0.4 million is suggested for additional DAS employees to cover its standalone structure. Additional city employees are recommended for a project manager and a CIS employee. And finally, we're recommending $400,000 towards early childhood education to begin to address the long-term changes necessary to sustain this. Details on the funding is available on this slide, which breaks it out across FTE costs, spay and neuter, and other costs. We believe that Dallas's issues are solvable, but will require community action. Many groups will need to take a step forward. That includes the City of Dallas, Philanthropies, DAS, Transfers and Rescues, the Commission, and residents of Dallas. We believe the biggest risk of this plan is simply stagnation. It's important to divide and conquer, to get started quickly, to monitor progress, and to refine over time. We would recommend a full-day summit to align on ownership, to align on pledges from different organizations, to prioritize and decide how you will measure success. We'd recommend starting small, building out these programs over time instead of preparing for a big bang launch. And finally, we'd recommend regular and frequent progress reporting where you could reprioritize resources, highlight obstacles, and focus on the biggest opportunities. To support these changes, we're providing 3 deliverables to the community. First is our white paper, which contains an explanation of our research and recommendations. Second is initiative detail that provides background context, key assumptions, and sizings on each of our recommended initiatives. And finally, additional working materials that outline more work done over the course of this project. Thank you.
May I jump in for 1 sec, Stephen?
Yes.
Before we go to Q&A, I just wanted to make an additional point on the budget so that nobody has a heart attack in the middle of the meeting. We are not suggesting that the city should fund 100% of these initiatives. We believe that if the city focuses on the 2.7 of increase for DAS and the 0.6, the $600,000 of incremental city funding outside of DAS, we believe that the animal rescue community, the animal spay-neuter community, local and national funders should be able to get together to provide the money and the execution of the surge in spay-neuter. We are not suggesting that the city needs to fund all of that, and we're also not suggesting that DAS needs to take it upon itself to add to its mandate to start going out into communities and providing these spay-neuter services that are currently being provided mostly by other nonprofits. We want to bolster that activity through the nonprofits.
Okay. Is that it? All right. Questions? All right. That was pretty good. No questions, so I guess we'll go home. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you had done an excellent job. Okay. All right. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. You would have probably won a lot of votes if you adjourned us all really, really quick.
Can
we be done? No. I just take this opportunity to thank Peter and all the animal commissioners. I know I see my animal commissioner, Patty Cody, here, and I know there's several others, for your time and effort and for BCG and your discounting of your services and making this available to us. It's a real, I think we have a roadmap now. We have a plan that we can create now as a city from your results, and I think we'll be able to spend our money more efficiently. I think we all recognize that this is a city that impacts our entire, an issue that impacts our entire city and takes a lot of our public safety resources and impacts the quality of life for lots of neighborhoods. So I think we're committed as a council to making improvements. The budget is, I think, where my questions stem from on page 25. So you're saying this 2.7 million plus the 0.6, where's the 0.6 coming from? Is that what you're thinking? It's incremental city funding? What do you mean by incremental city funding? That we should put it in our budget? Or
do you want to take that, or shall I?
You're welcome to.
There's really two buckets. The first is that because there are so many initiatives going on in a short period of time, we're recommending a project manager position, not within DAS, but within sort of above DAS, within the city. I don't know exactly where it would go in the city infrastructure, but somebody to work on making sure that all of the different agencies are, and frankly some of the nonprofit groups working with DAS, are all coordinated, because there are some of the recommendations that involve agencies that are not part of DAS, such as getting better response on the citations to help with enforcement. So there's a project manager position. There's a data position, an information services position that's outside of DAS. And then a lot of the city funding is for a long-term investment that really has to do with changing the culture and changing the habits so that everybody gets in the habit of spay-neutering their pet. We would liken it to the way kids are taught in school today, that they need to recycle. That wasn't something I know that I was taught in school. My kids come home and they know what the recycling symbol is, and they know, they yell at me when I don't recycle plastic. We think an effective way, and what's worked in other cities, is to start the long-term process of educating kids about the need to spay-neuter, so that it changes the culture and we don't need to keep going back and doing it.
So you'd be recommending that the city take that education component on, or that facilitating working with DISD and the public
school? Providing staff, that the idea is to provide staff to go in and have these lessons.
Okay.
And the rest of the money is specifically for DAS, for specific positions and initiatives that are outlined.
Well, so my take on it would be to the city manager. I mean, we've been spending a lot of money. I'm not at my fingertips right now what we spend currently, but we spend a lot of money for animal services, and I don't want to continue to throw good money without seeing these results. And I think this is giving us a true roadmap so that we can put the kind of management in place. I'm not saying anybody should lose a job, but that we can have it structured where there's accountability, which, you know, I think is something that you have suggested, and tying metrics directly back to somebody. I know there's, you know, in the past there's been, I mean, I've seen a lot of not finger pointing, but just confusion on whose responsibility it is. When we have a department that has a director, you know, I've seen Jody up here say, well, I don't have the money to be able to hire more people, so I need to buy dog food. I think this is going to give us kind of be able to, you know, have a structure that's going to work, hold people accountable, know we're spending our money in an effective manner. And also it's going to help us leverage, you know, I don't think I realized until we've gone through this process how much money we've left on the table. We're not being able to leverage with nonprofits that can help us maintain and reach our goals, especially with the spay and neuter. So I'm excited. I'm going to expect, I know we have another $1.5 million in the budget this year, so I guess that's kind of 1.5 towards the 2.7 is how I would interpret that. But I look forward. I don't think, Mr. Gonzalez, you've told us how you're going to spend that money, so directly, or is it it is spelled out in officers, right? We're going to have more.
It's officers and increase spending on spay-neuter.
Spay-neuter, okay.
Essentially.
Okay. And then, I look for now that we have this information, how you're going to interpret it and if you're going to make any changes on how we're running the program or how we're going to be able to, because until we make these kind of changes, I don't think we're going to be able to leverage that money that's out there on the table. So I look forward to that. And I, again, thank you. Thanks to all the community that's played a role in this. I think we had a good response, and I continue to want to work with all the partners to let us really address this issue with all the different ways that we can go about it as a community and together and not in silos.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. And first off, I'd like to thank the Boston Consulting Group for this report. This is really an excellent consulting report. Being on the council now for 5 years, I've seen a lot of consulting reports, and this is actually the best one. And what makes it better than the best is thanks to Peter Brodsky for finding the funding for it, since the city didn't even have to pay for it. Usually we have to pay for it, and the work isn't this good. So I really appreciate it. I've seen some. I'll tell you offline the reports on the on the consultants we've dealt with before. Could we put up the slide with the recommendations? Great. I support all seven of these recommendations. I think it's. It could talk a little bit about each one, but what I'm most interested in today is which one of these from our city manager, Mr. Gonzalez, does he like? Mr. Gonzalez, are you willing to adopt number one, or would you like to see some council action around that?
I think it's would be very helpful to go through a process to get a mission statement that really sets out what are the priorities. That's one of the things that I think has been underlying some of the conflict is that we don't really have a fully embraced direction.
And you've got a proposed mission statement in here or some work on it. So, Mr. Gonzalez, do you like the mission statement?
I think a mission statement, however it's framed, is only as good as the process by which it's developed. And I would like to see more work done on involvement of the community and the various stakeholders in either more fully accepting of that mission statement or refining it.
Okay, let's go back to, I think it was slide 26. I'm looking for some enthusiastic yeses, Mr. Gonzalez, but I may not get them. I'm enthusiastic about all this and think we need to lead and not say wait on the community and everything. They're all here waiting for us to do something. We got this report. So we got six more opportunities to get an enthusiastic yes. Next, number two. Do you support increasing field take? Number two.
Yes, and if I might comment on my lack of what appears to you as a lack of enthusiasm, I hold my enthusiasm inside. But I should say that I am very enthusiastic about the fact that we have some very clear data to help us along with a roadmap to help get us there. So,
are you going to tell Joey to tell Chris to tell Jody, we need to increase field take, increase related enforcement, and we need increased education to prevent dogs from roaming, or do we need to pass some council act?
An enthusiastic yes.
Excellent. All right. Number three, are you going to tell Joey to tell tell Chris, to tell Jody that we need to increase the number of positive outcomes for Dallas dogs, euthanizing only the sick, and put some guidelines in place to do that?
Similarly enthusiastic, yes.
Great. When will we see that? I know you've had this report for a couple weeks like us. How soon are you going to get moving on that?
The mayor had already commented that he wanted to see something back in 30 days, and I think that's a reasonable time frame, and I hope to be back with some more specific recommendations on how to proceed sooner than that.
Wonderful. So recommendations to 30 days as measured from a couple weeks ago when you first saw the report, or from today?
From today.
From today, okay. Thank you. And then do you support providing approximately 46,000 low-cost spay and neuter surgeries in southern Dallas each year over the next 3 years?
Well, I can be enthusiastic about it. I would be even more enthusiastic if I had a clear picture of how that was going to be paid for. And certainly, if it, like this report, is going to be paid for by the community in terms of the on the private side, I would be more than enthusiastic.
What can you do as the city of Dallas under your control with the additional funding? If you get this $1.2 million, if you also get the additional funding that's already proposed in the budget for the spay and neuter program, how many of these 46,000 low-cost spay and neuter surgeries are you going to deliver in the next 3 years?
I'm told 11,000.
Is that per year or 3 years? Yes, the budget currently proposes $1.1 million this next year.
Currently proposes $1.1 million for 11,000. So now I'm not making any. Don't know what the next year's fiscal year budget would propose also. But at the current funding level, if it was sustained, 11,000 spay and neuter surgeries.
Okay, back to my question. Is that per year?
Yes.
Per year. Okay. So 46,000 over 3 years. 11,000 per year. Per year we need to get. So we need to get 11,000. So that's what how many we're short. But you can meet 11,000 a year.
Yes, we have 11 of that 46.
Okay. Then on number five, for creating a collaborative community of partners, are you ready to make some type of DAS friends policy? Work with groups like the SPCA. Get some rules in place sometime soon to work with these other great groups we have in Dallas, and particularly Southern Dallas, working on the issue?
Enthusiastically, yes.
Great. So we'll see that in the next 30 days. Are you going to strengthen accountability in our government? Are you going to support moving this to a separate department, as is recommended, and put in the proper management in place to make sure this happens?
Looking to be making some changes in the current structure. I'm not holding out or not ready to embrace an additional department at this time.
I know, but you love... This is the first time ever that Mr. Gonzalez has said he doesn't want to add to the hierarchy at the Dallas City Hall. And this is the one time that we need to add to it, because we got a consulting group. It tells us. I've seen resiliency officers added. I've seen Neighbor Up, Neighborhood Plus, chief of that added, chief of wellness added, all these different structures added. And now we actually need one, and there's a reluctance to do it. So I have to say that one's a little disappointing, because I'm not one for growing bureaucracy, but here it needs to be in a separate department. I fully support the BCG department recommendation. So that's, I mean, we need to make these changes more than we need a chief of resilience and these other various chiefs floating around. This is one that's needed. All right, let's see if we can end things on a good note here, Mr. Gonzalez. Are you ready? Excuse me? I thought I heard something over on the side. It absolutely is. So we're all rooting for you, Mr. Gonzalez. Here we go. All right, in the next 30 days, you can get some metrics in place and help us ensure efficiency and measuring outcomes and get these friends policies in place to increase volunteers.
Absolutely and enthusiastically.
Thank you. Well, we're walking through each of them. Thank you for the comments over here. Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez, for your answers. That was a great report. I'll return the balance of my time to the council. Thank you.
Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The let's look at 24. Are we already? Let's see. Okay. I also am completely in favor of all seven of these recommendations. I don't want to repeat everything Mr. Griggs said, but you really did a good job. And one thing that I really appreciate that I thought was that I think added to the quality of the report was the outreach that was made to council early in the process. You all created time for input from people who I trust as very serious thinkers about animal welfare. And that, I mean, to go out to the SPCA's general counsel and interview her, that's a very smart way to approach this. And I think the planning shows in the product. So I really appreciate that. So if any of this sounds critical, it's just because I'm trying to refine it a little bit. I can't say enough, Peter, about your approach to this. It's been very, very refreshing. Here's the thing that when I look at this, I immediately say, uh-oh. 2 and 3. Please tell me how we do 2 and 3 in the next 12 months. You understand what I'm asking, Stephen, right?
We do not want to pick up dogs only to see thousands of dogs killed.
That's the exact concern, Peter. Thank you.
We do not think it is an either or. We think both and is very, very feasible and is budgeted in this report.
To Peter's point, 2 and 3 ultimately need to balance each other out, and both of these have ramps over which they'll become effective. The underlying initiatives under 2 are to increase the number of ASOs dedicated to field intake. This will take time, as hiring takes time. There's also operational efficiencies to improve that. There is community outreach that exists today and can be further continued by the Dallas community, along with longer-term changes to the enforcement. A short-term solution is also to share loose dog service requests today that are not dispatched with community organizations that do engage in street rescue. Ultimately, these 5 things will take time to ramp up, specifically because it takes time to add ASOs.
Well, it takes time to get money out of us also.
Yeah. While that's happening, there's a lot of short-term wins that you can do on the positive outcomes. So, for example, improving digital marketing through better pictures and more online postings could provide more relief on positive outcomes that would offset any increase in intake. There's also additional opportunities through adoption footprint, high-volume transfer partnerships, transport programs, surrender deflection. All of these programs can be piloted and scaled over time in a way that would offset incremental intake.
And I strongly appreciate the qualitative description. When it exists, either through Boston or through city staff, I'd simply like to see a quantitative rollout for those. As dog collection increases, how are we increasing good dog outcomes? Doesn't need to be. I don't need details today. I'm just pointing it out as an issue that I know that every animal advocate who looked at that series of recommendations probably had the same question.
So your question's highlighted in the chart on the right-hand side. Today there's an additional 5,500 dogs that are needed to be given positive outcomes to reach a 90% LRR. If you assume that we're going to add an additional 8,700 dogs of intake, that would mean that there's 14,000 dogs that need to be saved today.
Mm-hmm.
Our recommendations identify opportunities to place 11,500 of those animals at their full scale. You'd also have at a higher level of intake, a higher level of humane euthanasia, and that would leave a gap of 1,500 dogs, which once intake is reduced over time would not exist. And so I think your question is, what does this look like over time, which is a very important question that we can't answer today without understanding how these things are phased out over time.
I've had a little chance since you guys came to present this to me, which I thought was – did you have something, Mr. Bolden? I'm sorry.
Sure. I was just going to add it. We can share some additional data, but I think every time we've looked at it, recommendation number three naturally ramps up quicker than number two. I think that's – and so in the short term, in the short term, you're actually covering the additional intake that's coming in.
I hope you're right. I've had a little time to look at this report since you came to present it to me, which was incredibly nice of you. And I think it's appropriately optimistic, but I do think it's optimistic. Just as an example, your FTE works 2,080 hours a year. Probably we're getting closer to 1,800 hours a year out of an FTE. It's just a small thing, but we need to make sure that we're not fooling ourselves. And that's really the issue here in terms of, tell me why you're going to be able to align partners in a way that hasn't been done before. And specifically what I'm thinking of is this, the partner alignment which you're talking about, which I think is critical, and we have to do it, but it was supposed to have been done under DCAP. And that apparently didn't work.
So you make a good point, because partnerships are absolutely critical, and I'm new to this topic and community, but there are a lot of factions in the community, and I would say it's fair to say that everyone is not rowing in the same direction.
Tell me what gives you confidence that you can change that, Peter.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be any one person that changes it, but I'll tell you. So first, a couple of things. The BCG team surveyed the rescue groups and the potential partners and identified a couple of key stumbling blocks that prevent tighter relationships. I think DAS is sometimes difficult to do business with, and it's not necessarily because they're intending to be difficult, but there are a lot of manual operations that could be automated that would just make it easier for rescue groups to come in and tag the animals that they want to take. You could have a much better strategic partnership with a large organization such as the SPCA, where they're intercepting dogs before they even come into the shelter. I think it's just going to take a very concerted effort by the leadership at DAS. I think the commission has a role to play. I'm personally willing to get involved to come to the table and say, okay, this is our moment. Let's make it happen. It just has to be a priority. And DAS may need to change some of its policies and procedures to make it easier to partner with.
So we're going to improve DAS's approach to partnership.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to leave the impression that DAS, you know, is standing there with guns at the door saying you may not enter. But there are ways that DAS can be made to be more user-friendly. There is a reason why the three large animal organizations in the area collect 20,000 dogs, and only 386 of them came from DAS. It's not because DAS isn't next door. There's something about our processes that we need to improve in order to make it easier to happen. And I think that management, current management, is willing to do that. And whatever management structure we come up with needs to be told from the highest levels that having these community partnerships is a top priority.
Okay, that's good. Again, it's appropriately optimistic. Count on me for personal time. Where you need me, I will show up for that. Please do.
Thank you.
I want to absolutely endorse the idea of a separate department and new management structure. I think you've identified a weakness in the system. And I know that this council, particularly through the efforts of Mr. Medrano, has close relationships with DISD and can implement the education piece. There is one piece that I believe is missing from this report, and we discussed it, so I don't think I'm surprising you. I think that there is a way to blackball bad owners. I think we've seen an increase in enforcement, which is appropriate. But I think that there are administrative ways where we can put people on a blacklist and circulate that blacklist. When we and it can happen we already have the dog bite protocol in place. If it simply resulted in a circulation to our partners of people who are no longer considered responsible dog owners, I don't think legally we're going to run into any trouble. I mean, with the number of people who actually complete the dog bite protocol, we can see that we're not going to get sued over this. So I would like to see that added as an approach that DAS and the city, and in collaboration with the DA's office, takes, and in collaboration with our partners on the administrative side.
Okay.
But this
time's
is
up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mayor Brodsky.
Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to say thank you to Peter and to Boston Consulting Group and to Stephen. I had opportunity to sit down with Peter and Stephen. I appreciate you reaching out to me shortly after the report was completed in draft form. And going through this particular process, I have a number of things to ask and a number of things to say. First of all, I think it's very important that you talked about this balance in terms of public safety and animal services. You know, what I've learned is, you know, you have people who own both sides of the spectrum, and whenever you can make both sides, you know, both sides upset, then you're moving in the right direction. So I think you're moving in the right direction. I'm in support of all of the recommendations as well. I think we need to go big on this. I understand our city manager provides direction for staff. We provide direction for our city manager. And so I think we need to, with all deliberate speed, move forward on this. So my first question is, are we getting the bang for our bucks? And if not, why not? Do I need to be more specific?
You mean, are we getting a return on the money we're currently investing in
exactly.
DAS?
If you don't feel comfortable, we can ask someone from the consulting group to answer the question.
I mean, I'll take a stab at it, and that's one question we didn't prepare for, so I'll ad lib it.
Well, I appreciate that.
The answer is that I think that we can get a better return, and I actually highlights an opportunity here that it's in the recommendations, but it's buried deep, and I want to bring it out, which is, I think one of the reasons why DAS has had a hard time executing is because it is extremely difficult to hire people. And one of our recommendations is to exempt DAS from the civil service hiring process. not from civil service protections once they're employed, but that really is a big impediment to staffing up quickly and accomplishing the mission of the organization. I also think that there is some historical underfunding that's made it very difficult to manage because there hasn't been a lot of staff. And having said that, I think that BCG, and they can expand on this, have found plenty of areas where there are inefficiencies that could be improved and have outlined some of those in their recommendations. Do you want to expand?
Oh, that was a good job ad-libbing. I would just build by saying, I don't know if there's a yes or no answer to the question. I think what we found is that DAS's managerial processes and activities don't really scale to the size of the city and to the size of the problem the city faces. It's very inefficient. And so in order to get more out of the dollars going forward, to get a better ROI on what you're spending, all the managerial processes and activities need to be redesigned and rethought so it scales to the size of the challenge.
I would add that in cities that we looked at where they were very effective in solving their problem, it can't be fixed just by the city government. So it does require, and as you think about scorecarding, monitoring, keeping accountability in place, is the collaboration with the set of partners who are in the community is the only way to get this done. And there are lots of organizations that are willing to collaborate, but that has to be a key part of the plan and the management accountability.
Okay. Another thing that I really liked about what was stated was it wasn't about we're making recommendations to reduce the loose dog problem. It was to eliminate the loose dog problem. And so in those lines, let me ask this question. First of all, why do you feel it's necessary for animal services to function as its own independent department?
I'll take that because I've been pushing for that. I think there's three reasons. The first reason is symbolic, which is this is a small department budget-wise, but it is a very important department. It protects human lives and it protects animal lives. It is on the front lines of public safety, and you're dealing with living beings. And so I think there's a statement made when you say it deserves its own department. Another thing is that if you look at the successful efforts around the country, the ones that have been successful, Austin, San Antonio, for instance, have it as a department, so there's precedent for it. But I think it really addresses two things. The first is accountability. This is a multi-layered, there's a multi-layered reporting system, and Councilmember Griggs, I think, made the point rhetorically when he was asking Mr. Gonzalez, are you going to tell Joey to tell Chris to tell Jody? That level of layer, that number of layers, just makes it very difficult to find out when things aren't going well, what's the roadblock. And there's just a lot, there's just no ability to put your finger on it. And so I think that is problematic in terms of holding people accountable. It's problematic in terms of execution because the person who's running DAS is not high up enough in the bureaucracy to really have a front row seat at the table. And I think the last thing is that this is an extremely difficult job, and it's not just a job of that involves in-depth knowledge of animals. That's important, but it's a high-level management position. This is there's logistics, there's data mining, there's public relations, there's an enormous number of high-level management tasks, and I think that with a a more prominent position in the city bureaucracy, you would attract the absolute very best management talent to run the organization. So those are all the reasons why I'm an advocate for it.
Okay. Peter, this question is for you. How effective is the Animal Advisory Commission?
Boy, you're packing a punch today.
I'm just warming up.
This is an awkward thing to say as the chairman of the commission, but I don't think the commission is effective at all. I don't think that it is effective to have an advisory commission to a department that's a subsidiary of code, first of all. I also think the nonprofit and for-profit boards that I've served on that have been effective have a variety of different perspectives around the table. And those boards are resources for the management team when they need help with something and advice. This is an advisory commission. The vast majority of the members, who are all smart and knowledgeable and good people, they all have very similar perspectives and experiences, because who wants to be on the Animal Commission board? Somebody who really cares about animals. But what we need, I think, in order to really be a true advisory board and not just a support system for DAS, but an advisory board and a board that can hold people accountable, is, let's have a data expert on the board. Let's have a marketing person on the board. Let's have somebody who really understands logistics on the board, so that when the management team is trying to figure out how to be the best it can be, there are folks on that commission who can provide that sort of insight. Mm-hmm. I also think BCG recommends subcommittees of things like that. At the end of the day, it really gets down to what's the mission of the commission, what role does it play, what is it asked to do, and then who's on it. And I really mean no disrespect to any of the people who are on the commission, because I said they've all forgotten more about animal welfare than I'll ever know. They're all experts. I just think that there's a lack of diversity of experience that makes it less effective than it could be.
Well, in the 18, 17, 16 seconds I have, and hopefully it'll be around too, because I just got warmed up. Every time I drive down the street and I see people walking down the street who are exercising, they have to carry golf clubs, or they have to carry a stick, or they have to carry mace or whatever they feel necessary to protect themselves from animals, it makes me that much more grateful for this report and for the fact that we need to move with all deliberate speed. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you very much, Mayor, and thank you, Peter, Dylan, Stephen, Keith, for putting this together. Thank you very much for visiting with me and going over this plan. I am very excited about the fact that we did this really in-depth dive, and I think one of the really important components about it was bringing in somebody that a group that really had no experience in this business at all, had no agenda one way or the other or anything, and just about getting the metrics. I think that was the other thing that was so important that just we haven't been able to do in Dallas, is a deep dive into the data to figure that out. So that's very helpful. I think one of the biggest issues with DAS that, of course, Peter, you've emphasized, is accountability and figuring out kind of who's in charge and how that works and how that happens. One of the obviously kind of conflicting missions we have over there is the shelter mission versus the enforcement mission, and trying to figure out how to manage both of those together or separately. So we need to look at that. With regards to an independent department, and we've had this conversation, I, for one, am reluctant just to add more bureaucracy, but I am also think it's key to have the accountability. So I'm listening on this one. I honestly, just because I don't like building more bureaucracy, I'm leaning away from it, but I haven't made a position. I'm listening. And I think it's really important to get it, to improve it or get it right, no matter what. With regards to civil service, you know, that's problematic throughout the city. So fortunately, the Civil Service Board is taking steps to help us look at how we can one of the problems we have is HR and civil service just stand as independent models. So when you're done fixing this one, we'll put you over civil service, and you can fix that
Thanks.
One. And so that's it. So when we come down to this, y'all, you know, you put out there what it's going to cost us to do it budget-wise. And things like, you know, an independent department, things like additional spay-neuter, things like education, of course, all cost money. And as I advocate a lot of times, it's all about choices. So this council needs to make the choices as to whether we're going to put money into this plan, put money into Fair Park, put money into recruiting and retention for our young officers in the police department, you know, if we need to right-size the paramedics in our fire department, you know, what we need to do in all these different areas. So, I mean, sitting here today, it all sounds great, and we got to go back and make those difficult decisions. Nevertheless, of the many briefings and presentations I've seen in the last couple of years of the city, this one seems to be the most in-depth and seems to come with the most information in a consumable way. So thank you guys very much for doing that. This is something that we do need to fix. There's no question. And I think you guys have done a lot to put out the roadmap for us, and that now the burden is on us to follow that and appreciate your hard work on it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your presentation. I agree with Mr. Kleinman that, you know, a lot of times we get presentations like you should aspire to do this or you should goal to do that. And I really personally appreciate how you had the short, medium, long. I just think that's fantastic. Peter, I'll ask you this question as chair of the board for the Animal Advisory Commission. When you showed them this presentation, what was their take on it? As to your point, as people who are very linearly focused on, you know, the dogs and their caring of that, what was their take on it?
Well, the commission has not been presented the entire report yet. We did an interim update that was really just the fact section. The recommendations hadn't been fully fleshed out yet, and our next meeting isn't until middle of September. I would say that the reaction to the facts was questioning methodology. I don't think there was any big surprise. I think everybody understands that there's a loose dog problem. I think the bite information was probably the most controversial because it was new and it does show that the problem is really getting worse, and so there were some questions about that. But generally speaking, I think that the commission, the informal feedback I've gotten from the commission has been what I said at the beginning, which is anybody who knows anything about these problems knew a lot of this already, but they're glad that the report is an impetus to get this sort of hearing on it so that the issues can be addressed.
You know, one of the things I would like to come out of this conversation, you know, I'm fortunate in my area that we don't have a big problem. But serving on this council, you still have the meetings with those on the pros and on the cons, and whichever day it is, they tend to flip-flop. I really do not want to have the narrative coming out of this conversation that, well, it's their fault. It's Jody's fault. It's this Animal Advisory Commission's fault. If there's a failure of the Animal Advisory Commission for a lack of diversity, and I think you made a very fair point, that's our failure because we're the ones that appoint them. So I just want to make sure that as we come out of this process, and you'll even see it through the dynamic of the crowd, you know, depending on the point, well, we have claps and people are sitting on the opposite sides of each other. And I guess, you know, I think Mr. Griggs maybe had mentioned it earlier about kind of what the long-term outcome is – how do we make it not be a big episode of Mean Girls, where depending on what side you are, you either love people or you hate people? What do you feel like, as somebody who's dive in, both from the advisory commission side, somebody who's listened to the opinions of those who might not be on the board. Where do you, what are the one or two things that, if you said, Mark, success 2 years from now looks like this, to get people at least, whether there's respectful disagreements or not, that people are at least rowing in the same direction? What do you think, in your personal opinion, are the one or two things that you would see happening in that respect?
It's a great question, and before I address it directly, I want to underscore and agree with what you said. The last thing in the world that we need here is scapegoating. I mean, we didn't get into this problem overnight. You can go back 50 years, and there were articles in the paper about this. And the truth is that as much as people are frustrated with the situation today, you know, Dallas Animal Services has made a lot of progress in the last 5 years since the infamous cat in the wall incident. And there are some real successes. I think that this report offers us an opportunity to build on those successes and really take it up to the next level, which it very much needs to, because there are some real problems still. You know, what does success look like? Success to me looks like we're well on our way to accomplishing the spay neuter goals. It's a 3-year process, so 2 years in, we won't be done. And we're beginning to see the results of that by having a decreased intake, and also the intake that's coming in is showing a higher percentage of spay neuter. That to me is the permanent solution. That's evidence that the permanent solution is working. I think more qualitatively, we've got to figure out a way to get the animal community working together in the same direction. And I really think that BCG's recommendations on things like transparency, sharing of data, and really having an approach that's inclusive of everybody, where everybody can play a role, is going to go a long way towards that. I also just think, you know, in my business career, I found that when everybody is doing well and making money, everybody's happy. And when things are not going well, that's when there starts to be infighting, you know, within companies. And I think it's the same thing in this community. There's a feeling right now that things aren't going well. Too many people are being endangered. And on the other side, too many animals are being euthanized. And so that's when people start fighting. And I think if we can start to have some more successes, that will breed more cooperation.
Thank you for saying that. I'm sorry, did you have a...
The one thing I would add is, you know, one of the recommendations, you know, if you are to adopt them, is around scorecarding. And to the degree that everyone is focused on the scorecard, where you want to get, the levels you want to achieve in the time frame, everyone can focus on the future. So everyone can say, are we making progress? And if there is either review by this group or publicly of the scorecard, then there can be accountability.
You know, I think just in my part of it, I think you make a really articulate point, and so do you, Mr. Brodsky, in that I think if you look 2 years down the road, you know, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, we all want the same thing. Nobody wants to be killing dogs. Nobody wants to be having people being bitten by dogs. You know, there may be some disagreements in the way we go about it, but we all want the same goal. And I think you make a really articulate point about the accountability aspect of it. You know, from an accountability standpoint, Mr. Gonzalez, I think the one ask I would have is I don't think we need to create a new Bureau of Labor of Dog Services, but I do think we need to give Jody a fair shot. But one of the biggest complaints I have in sitting in briefings is she doesn't She has to sit there and present the briefing because she's not the one writing it. If she's going to be held accountable, ultimately, success, failure, whatever you define that to be, if we brought her in to be best in class, let's give her a shot to be best in class. Not answering to somebody, let her run the roost. And if we do that, I think that's something that we can do to get above the cloud line, to give a shot at enacting a lot of the propositions that you're asking for. So I think that'd be my ask. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Anyone else? Round two. Sorry, Ms. Grayson. I'm sorry. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Could I ask?
Yes, of course.
Oh.
No.
Okay. Could I ask on this 46,000 spay neuters a year? And you say you're making progress toward that already, but is that a realistic number or an idealistic number? How feasible is that?
Other cities have completed that level of spay neuters on an annual basis, so we do believe it's achievable. But we'll require the whole community, both through brick-and-mortar facilities that exist today and additional mobile vans to go into those communities.
And it's going to require an enormous amount of work to find the funding for it. It's a quantum leap in the amount of funding from what's been done in the past, and the funders in Dallas have been very generous because we've never been able to articulate how many we actually need. We've just known spay-neuter is good, so we're going to go try to do as many as we can. Now we're going to be going back to funders, and we're going to have to go to local funders who care about animal issues. We're going to have to go to local funders who don't care about animal issues but care about public safety issues, and we're going to have to go to national funders in order to accomplish, in order to raise that money. But we think armed with the BCG data about how effective it can be, I'm cautiously optimistic that it can be done.
I mean, we know it's effective.
Yeah, we're nowhere near there. I don't want to give the impression that we're going to come out of here and issue a press release that we've raised $20 million to go do it. Far from it. We're just at the very, very beginning stages. The conversations we're having right now are, let's gather up the spay-neuter organizations in the city, come up with a plan that everyone would execute together, divvy up parts of the city or however we're going to do it, and then go to the funders together with a comprehensive plan that we can then all be held accountable to as a community.
So who's the we that's going to organize all of this and pull everybody together? And
well, at the moment, I've offered to start that process. I was on the phone with several of the spay-neuter organizations yesterday, and what I've said is I don't know how to execute the plan, but I think that I can help facilitate getting everyone together and crafting a plan that will meet the needs of the funders. At the end of the day, it's going to be the spay-neuter organizations that have to figure out what's the most effective way to do it.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
I was just going to add one point. I think this particular number, the 46,000, I think was one of the big insights from the work coming in. I think if you think of the big fix for Big D, and we got to roughly 11,000 spay-neuters, I think at the time, I think people thought that was a massive number of, that was a massive number of spay-neuters. I think what we found was that it was actually 4x less. You needed 4x more of that to get there.
Right, 4 times.
Which is just a massive insight, a massive aha for us. And then when we saw that you could do it in other cities, or other cities had done it at that level, that gave us a lot of confidence that if we could go after this lever, we could actually make a big difference. And if you don't, what you find, what this chart's showing is if you don't go after it at that massive of a level, you're going to see it to continue to grow. And then you're also fighting time, which is if you do it less than 46,000, you're basically pushing out the problem more and more years.
No, I understood that. I know that you're saying this is what it's going to take to get a handle on it so that you actually can start reducing the numbers of stray dogs.
Right. Yeah. In a short amount of time.
In a shorter amount of time.
Yeah.
My next question is, you have outcomes of this study. Do you feel like your staffing recommendations and costs are sufficient to meet that, or is it more of a starting point?
I think we're confident that they're sufficient to meet that. The biggest challenge will be onboarding those people in an expedient manner to get them started.
Okay, so that leads me to my next question. Thank you. We're talking about not perhaps using civil service in order to hire these folks, but then I think, Peter, you said that they could still have civil service protections. So, AC, I wanted to ask you, is that how it works? Can we hire people without going through civil service and then they'd still have civil service protections?
My off-the-cuff response would have to be no, but we can look into it. that's a whole process that's set up by charter.
Mm-hmm.
And so without more research, I don't know that that's possible.
You know,
and I made that comment based on, I don't actually remember which person in government I was talking to. I mean, our original recommendation was just exemption from civil service. But what we're really getting at is the hiring process, and it was suggested to me that that was possible. If it's not possible, then we would say it's really about getting people hired quickly.
It's about getting ramped up in personnel, I know. But I just when you said that, it just made me think. I don't think that's doable, but we can find out. And actually, we're taking a hard look at human resources and civil service right now, the whole process. It's just that I don't think you can hire without civil service and then have civil service protections. But we'll find out more about that. And then I wanted to ask Mr. Gonzalez, because it seems that everyone has bought into this, from what I'm hearing, this idea of a separate department. Could you tell us why you're hesitant to do that?
Part of the reason why is when we talk about the all these various things that are very much needed, very much well thought out, is that we have similar stories about so many other things that go on throughout the city. I think Mr. Kleiman mentioned it earlier. There's all kinds of choices that we're having to make about a number of different things that all have price tags associated mm-hmm. with them, and they're all good things. So it's how do you make that all work? Well, contrary to what was suggested, we're actually merging some areas in trying to save costs to address some of the issues that have been raised. And the issue here is about, besides all the other things we're looking at, is cost and how to save on how we go about implementing it. Now, in DAS, I don't know how you get any more in the front burner in terms of attention than what we've been having. We've actually, through the fact that it's in code, actually have had more resources there beyond what they have immediately. And the duplication of the cost for administration, I don't know that it really helps make anything better other than the symbolism that you referred to. So I want to take another look at maybe there's some other restructuring that helps to address the notion of it being on the front, even from a perception standpoint, more on the front burner, but maybe can be handled in a different way.
I just think, Mr. Gonzalez, that I think people are talking more about bottom line accountability, and I think that's where the separate department recommendation kind of is coming from.
Yes, and I hear that, and I'll be looking to try to address that as well.
Thank you. And my last point is I totally agree with Mr. Kingston about enforcement. I mean, we have to have better enforcement, and we have to go after these folks that is irresponsible pet owners, and we don't seem to be doing enough of that. There seems to be a reluctance somehow to go after these people. Maybe we don't have the tools that we need, or maybe we don't have the will. But I think we just have to. I got an email from a lady who was bitten by dogs, and she knew other people that had been bitten by dogs, and apparently there's some affidavit process where you can get a dog declared a dangerous dog, but nobody knows about this. And so I really think that we really need to do more in terms of going after these people. You know, you can quarantine the dog, and apparently once it's quarantined, then the owner can get it back again after it's bitten somebody. So I just would like to look into that a little bit more, see how we can make that better and do more in terms of enforcement.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to confiscate the dog. It's a whole other step to then say to that dog owner, you are barred from ever owning a dog again.
Yeah,
and
I know.
That's the, you know, a dog under law is property. So I'm not a lawyer, but everyone that we've spoken to has said that it is extremely difficult, if not impossible, to bar people from owning a dog.
And I've run into the same thing. Every time I have suggested things like placarding houses and stuff, I'm told you can't do that. So it's frustrating.
And even if you do, that can be taken down. People move all the time. I think the city needs to step up enforcement is on the is on the following through with citations. I mean, it is not lost on anybody here that the owners of the dogs that killed Antoinette Brown had received a lot of citations and had essentially thrown them in the trash, and there was no follow-up. And what BCG found was, 44% of the citations issued. Is that the right number? That never even receive a response.
Definitely we need to do more with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I first want to thank my Animal Services Board member, Sandra Leary Mustafa, for being here today and the commitment you're making, and then my previous board member, Bonnie Mathias, that spent a lot of energy and time on this problem. Really, as I've said before, when I first got elected, or actually even before I got elected, as I was walking the streets, that was a very, very critical problem. And I've insisted on a higher level of commitment by the city of Dallas, since that time. We're talking about, the education process to the schools. I've visited every DISD school in my district and most of the charter schools, and those are things that I've mentioned, Peter, recycling, don't litter and spay and neuter your animals. And we've done that in a very big way, and we've obviously had free spay and neutering, but in spite of our efforts and the increase in the animal services budget each year since I've been here, it still is not really even chipped into the problem. I'm concerned that if we begin to pick up more dogs, just like Mr. Kingston was saying, that, then what? We, back in not too many years ago, 10, 15 years ago, we were putting down as many as 36,000-plus animals, and we've kind of dropped that down to around 12,000. Simply not picking them up, though, is not going to solve the problem. We know that, so we're going to have to do that. I think the seven recommendations, I'm in favor of all of those, but they're not new. They're just not new. We've been doing, fits and starts and some of these for the last 3 years or more. And it's not rocket science, as they say, but we've got to have better, methodologies, better initiatives, different partners, and more of them, by the way. We're going to need a lot more animal services officers. But if we do that, really, what does that mean? I mean, are we designing any metrics? Was that part of your study? If we add another DAS officer, he's going to pick up X dogs, or he's going to, we do have that data.
Yeah, we actually have slides that go through each of the 28 sub-initiatives. Under the seven, there's 28 sub-initiatives, and then we have a chart that will go through the cost of each initiative and how many additional dogs will either be picked up or saved, depending on whether it's two or three, based on that sub-initiative. It's all in the materials.
Now, if we add, it's clear that technology and data have been huge. There's been a huge need for that. DAS, does BCG feel that the recommendations will fill these current gaps, or is this just a starting point? I want to take that, Stephen.
So we do feel that the funding meets all of the recommendations. Specific to data, we are recommending a project analyst within the recommendations that would provide the additional data to drive the tracking of these efforts. Okay. So for each initiative, we've met with DAS and talked about the resources that would be required and have reflected those in our plans.
There's nothing wrong with the software system and the data collection. The Chameleon product is fine. It's having the personnel and the expertise in-house to leverage it as much as it needs to be leveraged, and then to ensure that there's the appropriate connectivity from the vehicles back to the system to enhance the real-time collection capabilities and then the mining of that data. But we don't need a new several hundred thousand dollar software system.
Gotcha. That's encouraging. What does enforcement of spay-neuter really mean? DAS is already, writing citations, and will these citations be enforced? Will arrest warrants be issued if the citation's ignored? You've already indicated 44%, or basically are just nothing happens. How do we get on top of that?
I would say we haven't presumed that enforcement is a key driver of the overall plan. it's important. But really, you know, a dog that's, you know, that is fixed is much less likely to roam and bite. And, you know, that really is a cornerstone of this element. And as Dylan mentioned, and, you know, you mentioned, none of this is rocket science, but we have a rocket that can't clear the atmosphere, and we're trying to get to the moon. So if we really want to fix the problem, and right now it's being just, you know, kind of held constant, slightly increasing, if we really want to fix it and eliminate the loose dogs, we have to do it at a much greater scale.
Yeah, there was a statement, I think Mr. Thomas mentioned a little bit, go big, but I say go big or go home. You know, it's we've toyed with this problem for years, and we just really have not gotten serious. I think many people were just hoping it would just simply go away, or that's a Southern Dallas problem, or I don't really believe things are as bad as they say they are, but I can tell you firsthand it's every bit as bad, if not worse, than what you're characterizing here in the report, because I see it every day. I can't drive down a street in District 5 without there being loose dogs, and many times packs of dogs, and been close to being bit a few times to the point where they call me the dog whisperer, like, how did you avoid that? And I said, I don't know. Maybe my leg just doesn't taste good. I'm not sure.
With respect to enforcement, what we see is in other cities like San Antonio that have executed a high volume of spay and neuters, they're balancing both the stick and the carrot, so providing access to the community to get these surgeries at a free or low-cost rate while also enforcing the ordinances for those people that don't choose to participate. So that's the impetus for the recommendation, is to have both tools at our disposal as we go into these communities.
And I would also say I think there's a perception that, that some people think that Southern Dallas is filled with irresponsible dog owners. And, you know, there are certainly people who are irresponsible, but a lot of it really is about access, you know, both geographically and financially. So for someone who doesn't have, you know, very much money at all, $150 to spay or neuter a dog is a lot of money. And so, you know, a lot of this really is about getting the access there because, you know, we believe from the people we've spoken with that there is a real appetite to improve the situation, and people will, you know, when given the chance, will spay and neuter their dogs.
Yeah, we had at one of our churches, I noticed Saturday when I drove out early, they had a low-cost pet vaccinations at Inspired Vision Church. Had to be 300 or 400 people standing outside. It was a zoo. You wouldn't believe it, how many people they had out there. But, you know, pretty much in my two zip code, 75227217, there is ample funds available for not only low-cost vaccinations but also the free spay and neuter. So there's really no reason not to. And there's also no reason not to restrain your dog. You know, keep it in the house. Keep it behind a fence. I think too many people believe it's a low-cost security system. Just, you know, put a bowl of food and water on the porch, go away to work, leave your dog run around the front yard or on the front of the street, and somehow that's going to, you know, keep people from breaking into your house. That mindset needs to change. You know, it's a lot. Security alarms are pretty inexpensive, you know, $30-$40 bucks a month. And I just feel like that needs to be said. But we've just got way too many animals out there. So it's kind of like, you know, the inmates are running the asylum. In this case, the dogs are running the asylum. So thanks for your efforts. Appreciate what BGC has done. Peter, thanks for your leadership. DAS, thanks for your leadership. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I just want to make sure that we're being mindful of everyone's time if you've scheduled meetings after this. So we good to go a little bit past 11?
Supposedly with no end time.
No end time. Okay. I want to make sure. All right. Mr. Magoo.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I'm enjoying this discussion. It is... I'm sitting over here with going back and forth with being very encouraged and then going back into points of frustration of the past that's gotten us here. I spent, as you know, a number of years working in Southern Dallas and have been chased by dogs, surprised by dogs, and have witnessed standing in locations and in the course of an hour seeing, you know, 10, 15 dogs almost anywhere I was. And so it's been a frustrating time. Also, in working for the mayor and all the different people that have been involved in this discussion over the years and different council members, and he finally pulled us in. We had on Grow South, one of the scorecards was reduce the number of loose and stray animals, but we never could figure out how many were there. We never could get a baseline. We never could get the data. And I'm incredibly grateful for the work that y'all have done to give us a starting point. We've been asking and begging for that for a long time, and it makes a difference. It makes all of us around this horseshoe smarter in this topic. I've appreciated the questions that everybody has been asking, and I remember sitting around the table 2 years ago, and certainly want to thank Mary Spencer for her past leadership and help as we started some of these discussions. And I was back there talking to Jody just a little bit ago. I mean, none of this is new. We just now have it quantifiable. And some of the same recommendations that I see today, which, by the way, I support each and every one of these recommendations, including separating the department. I was contemplating and may still get some comment from our staff on this report as well, but it is past time to take action on this, and I am looking forward to the next steps from here. One of those next steps, and I just don't know the answer to this, what is the plan from here for BCG's involvement moving forward?
BCG's assignment is concluded as of today. What we asked them to do was spend 3 months helping us come up with the facts and the plan, which they've done. And now it's really up to us to execute. It's up to the city to execute on the recommendations at DAS, and they have a pretty clear roadmap as to how that can get done. And it's up to the community, the rest of the animal community, to get organized and work with spay-neuter, and then the community and DAS have to work together. But honestly, my biggest fear, and it's been said several times here, I think Stephen said the biggest risk here is stagnation and just lack of execution, and that's why the recommendations really focus on project management, executive leadership, scorecards to make sure, and they've even laid out, you know, first steps, second steps, third steps, you know, I'm trying to get Edison to join the Animal Services Commission. He hasn't agreed to, but
we'll find a way.
We'll find a way. We're going to rope him in.
All right. So I guess I don't know if this is to AC, but what are our plans to make sure this happens? What are we? I mean, and do we have the necessary means to follow up with the data management and everything that we're kind of getting handed at this point?
I think for the very most part, we can do it. As I mentioned earlier, within 30 days, I'll be coming back with some recommended steps on how to proceed. One of the first questions that will need to be answered is with regards to the additional money that's been suggested as far as the $1.2 million the council, well, I guess first me, but then the council will have to react to on that. Then there'll be some steps that I'll be laying out in terms of how we might organize around getting things implemented.
Okay. I heard the answer just a minute ago to the question that it's not necessarily the current technology, but it's personnel and proper people there. Is there any other technology out there that we need to help with where we are now, but also continuing the work that has been started with what BCG's done?
There aren't large-scale systems that are needed. There may be some incremental things along the way. So, for example, you may want a piece of software to automate uploading records to Facebook to improve your digital marketing of adoptions. But the core systems that they have in Chameleon is a suitable system. They also have recently invested in connectivity in their ASO trucks. That's in place, and so that's something to leverage more fully. So I won't say that there aren't any technology systems. There may be things that pop up along the way, and we need to be, you know, agile about bringing those on and using those. But I think fundamentally they have the right foundation in place to build upon.
Based on your analysis, since the increase of the connectivity and the I guess, bridging of Chameleon and the software, is that all functioning now? Is that all to a place where, from your point of view, you're satisfied that we're functioning effectively?
No, because I think the gap, again, is having the person there to own it and drive it forward. So the data exists in tables. They're just buried in a database in this building. We need someone that can go in there and get them, create reports, issue that, those reports to management, issue those reports to the community to get value out of that data versus just having a repository for data.
And what kind of person is that?
So it would be someone with experience writing SQL queries, kind of a database-minded person, and we've included funding for that in our recommendations.
Okay, funding for that. AC, do we have that person?
I would think we have that person in the in our CIS, but I don't know that they're dedicated totally to DAS at this time, and so that's part of the restructuring or part of the plan that I'll be needing to respond with.
Okay. Okay, I'll reiterate my support for the, all the recommendations here, and I'll be looking to better understand the reasonings why we can't have a separate department for this. But, again, thank you for all your efforts and persistence and everything y'all are doing to help the city. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Ms. Young.
Thank you. Having been an early critic of the plan, I'm excited today to say thank you to BCG and to Mr. Brodsky for your work on this particular study. I do have a few questions. I know that, and we've received several emails, and one of them introduced this idea of bringing back an animal cruelty investigator. And I know we're talking about loose animals, but I'm curious, in your studies, did you find any correlation between animal cruelty and the loose dog problem, or was it more of just a loose owned dog problem?
We did not address animal cruelty during the extent of our study.
So were you able to tell when you were kind of doing your ride-alongs and you saw, you didn't really know if they were loose-owned or if these are animals that had just been left?
Of the dogs we saw, we would qualitatively think that most of them were owned. Okay. Some of them had on collars. Many of them looked well-groomed. But we can't make any statement about cruelty.
Okay. The other question I have was from page 39 when you talk about the spay-neuter ordinance. Kind of what are some, can you talk about what in 4.4 when you talk about enforcing the ordinance, how does that happen? What are recommendations there for the city in terms of, and I do agree that it is an issue with citations, the enforcement of those citations, Mr. Gonzalez. Even we had this discussion when we were interviewing municipal candidates and trying to understand how these citations are being enforced, and I do know that that is a big issue, enforcement. So when you talk about enforcing the ordinance, what does that mean?
Well, it's required right now that unless you have a permit, you have to spay-neuter your pet. And I think right now what we're suggesting is that if we have this surge in spay-neuter, there's going to be a lot of contact with the public, and the conversation needs to be, hey, we're going to have a mobile van in your community here next Saturday. You need to spay neuter your dog, and if you don't, we're going to come issue a citation, and then hopefully that citation will be enforced. I just think that there needs to be a carrot and a stick. And so it's really about getting out with the public in scale, at scale, And if people, you know, the working assumption is based on the research that most people, if given the access And if it's made affordable, will spay neuter their dog. It may take two or three touches of that person, but they will do it. You need to then have the stick and say, okay, if you're just refusing to do it, you're going to be cited and it's going to be enforced.
Okay. The other question, you talk about high volume transfers, and I know we talked about this a little when we met. What are you all's suggestions there? I know in the past we've heard in Quality of Life Committee about programs that the city has participated in the past in terms of transfers. What are your suggestions there to the city on how we accomplish that?
Sure. So there are three very large animal welfare organizations around the Dallas area. What we're recommending is a close partnership with one of those, such that that organization could take a high volume of dogs from DAS. Today, DAS does have a lot of partners, but they don't partner strongly with one of these three large organizations, whereas in other benchmark cities, we see, you know, such a relationship could result in 1,500 or 3,000 animals going to that single partner. And so that would be a great source of positive outcomes through one partnership.
Did you find in your research with other cities that not only were they doing that, but they were that it may take, when we have a problem as large as the city of Dallas does, partnering with more than one large organization to make sure that we keep that euthanization rate down?
Oh, yeah. It's not that you'd have one partner and you'd exclude the rest. It's that you would have one partner that's sort of your preferred partner that's a high-volume partner. We need every transfer partner we can get. But we think that by having a pre-agreed, you know, relationship with someone like the SPCA or one of the other high-volume partners, it's a catalyst or it smooths the road to have more more dogs end up there. There are even programs about, you know, a parking lot intercept where the dog never even really goes into DAS. They just immediately get intercepted and taken to another facility, and their stray hold period gets played out at another facility. Well, that's guaranteed a positive outcome for that dog, and it's freed up another space at DAS. We just don't have that kind of partnership with a high-volume player.
Okay, and I know Councilman Magoo asked a little bit about equipment, and I would just again reiterate, Mr. Gonzalez, that after having attended or gone on a couple of ride-alongs, that I do still have concern about the equipment, particularly that our ASO officers have when they're out in the field, and how we can make it a safe environment for them when they are working in the field. And so I do still have concerns there. Also, I'd like us to continue as a city to look at some type of apprenticeship program that will help us be more efficient in the field as the animal services officers are out in the field, and it takes a long time for them to enter in information and then try to get from one call to the next, that perhaps I do believe there's an opportunity to create this pipeline of ASO officers through an apprenticeship program. So I still request that we would look at that. My other question for BCG, I know that you all were really focused and zeroed in on looking at management. Did you at all look at any policies of this city, policies of other cities, any recommendations there? We've been looking at the ordinance and the Quality of Life Committee. Any recommendations on policy needs or policy changes?
So fundamentally, when we thought about the policies that were necessary to accomplish improved public safety and improved animal welfare, we felt that the majority of those policies are in place. So principally, a spay and neuter ordinance is very important. There are other policies that came up in our conversations surrounding animal cruelty. We didn't address those during our study. And so when it comes to things like, you know, you should have your dogs registered, your dog should not be loose, your dog should be spayed and neutered, all of those policies and ordinances are in place, and we think those are the ones that will be important.
Okay.
So at this point in time, we wouldn't say that there are additional policies that are necessary specific to the scope of our project.
Thank you. Well, I will just close by saying thank you all for your work. Thank you to the Animal Commission, the District 7 Animal Commissioners here today, Deanna Salcedo. Thank you for your work in the community. She, I know, is hands-on in a lot of the free spay-neuter clinics, and so thank you for being in the community and being committed to that, particularly in the 217 and 227 areas, which also encompass District 7 and District 5, and I guess I'm a District 8. But, you know, we are certainly working together in the southern half of the city in terms of council members on trying to get out there and get in front with education of our citizens on, you know, what to do, not only as dog owners, but also as citizens that, you know, are dealing with the loose dog problem. And so we will continue to work with one another. And I will just say that I look forward to the day when our citizens will be able to, particularly in southern Dallas, walk to school, to run and walk in their neighborhoods without fear and to feel safe. And so I'm just excited about the study. I do support the recommendations and just want to say thank you all for the work. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And round two, Ms. Gates, you're up.
Thank you, Mayor, for the opportunity in round two. I wrote down a couple other questions I didn't get to ask in the first one, and some of my colleagues have kind of touched on about the technology, so I don't see that we have a technology deficit, but that is in line. Thanks for your comments on the bites. I had that down to ask. Sounds like, you know, the enforcement of spay and neuter is going to be hand in hand with getting compliance, which is always our enforcement of is trying to get compliance, and so we're going to have to work with the spay and neuter programs to make those work. So thanks for I won't go into any more depth there. I got those questions answered. But let's go back to the budget. And one, I want to say to AC, I think this is the first, the short 3 years I've been here, I think you have the most, this is a great alignment around these proposals. And I think the recommendations are strongly supported. So now I think because our budget deadline is right around the corner, I think what I would like to see from you is, you know, some type of summary of how you're going to implement these recommendations before the budget comes up. If you think you have enough, I'm assuming you do because you saw these when you created your budget, the money, the $1.5 million that you put in there. But my questions are right around that. I think it's going to be spay and neuter and then having more officers. And one, if you think that's obtainable to be able to get more ASOs on the street through our civil service that we're challenged with to be able to meet what you're asking for in the budget. And if you think the way he's spending this first $1.5 million is how you would spend it if you only had 1.5 of your 2.7 to be able to spend. Should we put budget amendments? We have an opportunity to put budget amendments by Friday. So I want to know if we say, hey, we need less of this or more of that, or if I should just be advocating that we can have, if we're going to need to up that 1.5 to 2.7.
So. We think you should up the 1.5 to 2.7.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because if we're going to do this, we got to do it. And I know 2.7 is a big increase on the budget, but it really brings us up to just over peer. And if you start picking and choosing, you end up with the unintended consequences. You're either going to pick enforcement. You're either going to choose picking up the dogs, and the live release rate suffers, or you're going to choose live release rate, and you're not going to solve the loose dog problem. The other thing I'll say is, if we're really going to go out and try and raise, you know, $15 to $20 million from the nonprofit community, they have got to see that the city is on board and doing everything they can to fix DAS, and then that's a, you know, a several to one match. So it's a hard question to answer.
Because that's where that next, where you get to 10.7 is to be able to leverage the city funds.
Yeah,
you're
not
going to get there if they don't think we're taking your recommendations.
I've had direct conversations with the funders. The funders were also briefed on this presentation, and they have said, you know, we don't want to fund into a dysfunctional system. We want to fund into a system in which DAS is working the way it needs to, and in which the community and DAS can partner together and get data, and they want to know that everybody's doing their part. So I think it's really critical.
I would also just add, you know, these are to fund the adoption of the specific recommendations. So to the degree that you don't adopt the recommendations, you know, you mentioned throwing good money after bad, you know, we would not suggest increasing the budget and not, you know, not actually implementing.
So are you supportive of the way that has been presented in this current budget, the 1.5? Is that a start, or is it not really refined enough to meet your recommendations?
I think the biggest gap is probably ensuring that there's adequate money dedicated to new FTEs. A lot of these individual programs will require people to execute them, and if we don't have those bodies budgeted for and hired, the programs won't get off the ground. Okay. And so I would ensure that the 1.5 is covering people behind the different programs we're recommending.
And I think, Mr. Gonzalez, it's covering people and it's going to provide 11,000. But are we sure we can go out and get those people in place?
We're adding, we're adding some resources to help address the hiring function, so that without the change or exemption, we can still focus on this to make that part happen. To the extent that I would see it as $1.2 million we put in there, I would actually suggest that if there's the commitments on the rest that's needed for the 46,000 spay neuters that you can bring to the table, early as possible, you know, maybe the other stuff that I was suggesting that I wasn't totally in favor of would change.
I would say, just to manage expectations, the process of raising this amount of money takes a long time. I mean,
I know that, and that's part of my concerns over here on the other side. But as I'm reading what they're saying, is that at a minimum they're looking at $1.2 million more than what is that I've already recommended.
It is, and what I'll say is that the spay-neuter effort is not going to do anything to help. You're not going to see the results of that in the next 12 months. This is about so that 5 years from now we're not still having the same conversation. The $2.7 million from the city, and it's, I guess it's a little more than that if you include the incremental city funding, but the $2.7 million for DAS is really about having immediate impact on the safety of our streets and on the live release rate at the same time. And so it is, you know, we're not going to be able to snap our fingers on August 1st and have $20 million fall in our pocket and start on the spay-neuter. That's going to be a process of convincing funders that that's how they want to allocate their resources. But we can be making a lot of progress as a city on improving people's and animals' outcomes right now. And that's going to be the catalyst to get the funding community. The funding community is not going to come to the table first and say, oh, we're going to give this money. Now will you please make DAS work better? The city's got to lead it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brodsky.
Can I just wrap up real quick?
Go ahead.
Thanks. That's fine. No, we need the explanation. So I just conclude by saying, one, I would like to see something in writing from Mr. Gonzalez that says how, you know, I think we can look at the budget, how he's going to implement his new money, but how that's going to translate in meeting these recommended goals. And then, Council, if we're all supportive of making these initiatives, I think we all need to see budget amendments that represent the ability for Mr. Gonzalez to move forward with the 2.7 or and how we're going to do it and where we're going to see cuts. So, all right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to address a couple of things that came up. I think that people should not have the idea that anyone was skipping the Animal Shelter Commission in terms of this. This council asked for this report to be brought forward quickly so it could be considered in the budget process. The other thing that I talked about with you all when you came to see me, and I think is actually may even be referenced in the report, is that there are basically no intact dog licenses currently being held. It's a handful. So when you see somebody with an intact dog, that person is breaking the law. And I see it a lot. I see it a lot. And while I want to be very cognizant of Chief Brown's warning that we ask the police to do too much, this is one area that is a public safety threat. And if a police officer sees someone walking a dog, an intact dog, that is a reasonable suspicion for a Terry stop, and it should escalate to investigating whether that person is licensed to have an intact animal. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to touch on a few areas. First off, I want to emphasize again how new this information is. Prior to this Boston Consulting Group report, a lot of us believed this was going on, but we didn't have the data. And so I think that's been so important, and we wouldn't be where we are today without this report, since this information is so new. So thank you for that. On the spay and neutering, do you see the program and how would you see it going out to the people? Because we talked about the limited access in terms of geography and finances. So briefly, do you see mobile vehicles going out, or how do you see that taking the spay and neuter and microchipping services out to the community?
Yeah, I want to emphasize again that this is not my area of expertise. But what we've seen in other markets is the mobile van, the mobile spay neuter van, seems to be a very effective way of doing it. I know that the SPCA is already talking about it. There are already a couple of them, but bringing the services to people, it's convenient, it's there, it's quick, it's done. So a combination of that. Leveraging the DAS facility free spay neuter days. There's a menu of different options, but mobile is absolutely got to be part of it.
Good. And so you think the budget that you're asking for, the additional funds, will help cover the mobile assets we need to get the spay and neutering out into the communities?
We don't think DAS would have a mobile unit. We think that would be part of the 501c3.
That would be part of the 501c3.
Yeah, my perspective on DAS's role in spay neuter is that DAS should be spay neutering the dogs that come in that are leaving for a positive outcome. And just that is going to be thousands and thousands of dogs. But in terms of going out into the community and actually being the one providing the service, I feel like that's more effectively done with other organizations. Do you agree with that, Stephen?
Thank you. Also, I'd encourage you on the Animal Commission. I know you've increased your number of meetings, which is great, because I think initially the tradition was just 4 meetings, but you've kind of increased the frequency. With all this going on, I would even encourage you to continue that and meet frequently to stay on top of all this, because always your feedback and other commissioners' feedback to the council is very much welcome to help be our eyes and ears on what's going on. So I would encourage you to continue with the frequency of your meetings, or even to, while we go through this period, to even have them once a month to help the council members know what's going on by being our eyes and ears. Lastly, do you have any thoughts on the registration process? A little bit different than what Mr. Kingston asked, but everyone's supposed to have their animals registered. We had an audit report, I don't know if you had a chance to see it, come out a couple years ago, talking about the lack of follow-up on people that register their pets. So did you have any thoughts on that program and where that should go and how that fits into things?
I mean, I would suggest I think it comes down to something similar to the citations, is, a drive to get people signed up or to get people cited really it would be pretty impotent without some enforcement. And so, I would just again point back to, the real drivers of the improvement here are not as based on those sorts of levers around citing and enforcement.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple more questions.
In your interviews with some of the potential larger partner organizations, what was their response as to why they didn't, or they were not working closer with DAS?
So I think we issued a survey across about 60 rescue organizations, and what you found is that the largest organizations have more unique needs. So they want specific circumstances to the relationship. They want, you know, specific relationships. Across the smaller organizations, you found things like, you know, transparency and understanding of the process, automation of the process. And so I think ultimately what it takes is just a more tailored model to partnering with those groups.
You may have a future in this business, but that was a very political response.
Can I add to that? It's sort of like, you know, if you're a frequent flyer on an airline, if you're Advantage Platinum, you're going to be treated better than a low frequency traveler. You get admission to the club, you get to board first, you don't have to pay for luggage. If we're going to have a relationship with someone that's going to take 1,500 to 3,000 dogs a year, we're going to have to treat them like our number one customer. And I don't think we're doing that right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can, and it's not that they need to be, we need to break any rules for them, but if they're really that high volume and we want to encourage that type of close relationship, then we need to craft that sort of specialized relationship.
And based on, you know, what you've seen, you or any consultants, what would it take? What are we not doing, and what should we do in order for that to happen?
Just very candidly, I've never been able to figure out exactly what has prevented DAS and the SPCA from having a closer relationship. They are next door to each other. I can't put my finger on what it is, but at the end of the day, they're the client, and we're the one with the need, and we need to make it our business to be user-friendly to get an understanding with them where they can take a lot of our dogs so that we can pick up more dogs without increasing the euthanasia rate. But it's not that anyone's trying to be political. There isn't one thing that we can put our fingers on and say, oh, if we just did that, there's just something that's prevented it from happening.
Okay. Based on our survey results, mm-hmm. if we looked at organizations that have decreased the number of dogs they're pulling from DAS over time, 60% of those said it was for unique reasons. You know, we focus on a different county. I can't get the certificates of sterilization from DAS, not responding to emails or phone messages. 35% also said it was due to a poor relationship with DAS staff. If we look at the flip side of organizations that increased the number of dogs they're pulling, 69% said it was due to personal relationships and trust with DAS staff. Mm-hmm. 31% it was because the process of pulling dogs got easier. 31% said that information became easier to access. So it's a combination of relationship and ease that works both ways. When it's there, people pull more dogs, and when it's not, mm-hmm. they don't.
Got it. That's more in terms of what I was looking at. My next point is about cultural challenges. Spay and neuter is not something that, you know, is popular in a lot of communities in Southern Dallas. And so when we talk about eliminating this problem, we're talking about, you know, over 40,000 dogs being spayed and neutered. And we're also talking about a surge in terms of over 3 years. How do we better inform people, you know, of the need, you know, and how if we provide this service, be it free, if people have to pay a minimal fee in terms of spay and neuter, how do we help them to understand? Because we have to all go out into our community, especially those of us who represent Southern Dallas, and say, hey, look, if you're tired of running from dogs, then these are the things that we're going to have to do, and you're going to have to help us get this message out. So how do you suggest that we go about that process? And I'll stop there because I know I'm almost out of time.
So there are organizations that are already doing this successfully today in Dallas, and we're really relying upon those organizations to continue that, and we want to bring them the financial backing to help them do more of it. But they're doing door-to-door outreach. They're talking to people. That kind of outreach is going to help people understand, and then when you combine that with enforcement to realize that if you don't come into compliance, there's a penalty, we think that'll also be an important tool. So I think the lesson is more of what we're already doing, just a lot more of it.
And I would just add, I think there's, you know, part of it is personal community outreach. I mean, all of you are involved in your communities, making sure that the message is out in the channels you have. And then I think the other piece is just, you know, marketing. A lot of the successful, you know, public-oriented change things include good marketing. You know, click it or ticket is a snappy way of saying, you know, buckle your seatbelt, which people, you know, 20 years ago would say, well, we just have a culture where people don't want to buckle their seatbelt. And, you know, finding a way to get people involved and, you know, let's take back our streets, let's make our streets safe again, you know, something about enforcement in there, I think there's a way to do it.
How about snip it or ticket?
Snip it or ticket, I like it.
Thank you, I was going to say the
All
same
right.
thing.
Yeah. We got it in. All right, thank you. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I'll be brief. I think until we get the loose animal problem stabilized, I think there does need to be a singular department with an aggressive results-oriented manager. And after stabilization, I don't see any reason why it couldn't be returned to the code compliance department. But I think right now, AC, we just need to put that kind of focus on it, that kind of energy on some of it that reports directly to you, as we've had in some of the other big problems that we've had in the past. I said earlier, I'm not going to get outdone by Casey on that line, go big or go home, I said that, and I think it's just that big of a challenge. But I think if Jerry Allen was here, he would say, if you can't run with a big dog, stay on the porch. So let's go, city management team. Let's either stay on the porch or get out there and solve the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll make my remarks, and then Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo will come after me. Okay. One of the things that I've listened to a lot of my colleagues talk about in some of the report, and I think that it was maybe lost in the newness of the information, but we really want to stress the importance of the difference between loose dogs versus owned dogs. What we're hearing a lot in the news is coming from owned dogs that's doing the biting. Loose dogs, yes, we have a lot of loose dogs. They tend to be a lot more docile, non-aggressive, but it's the aggressiveness of the loose owned dogs. Could you speak a little bit more about that? I guess, Stephen?
Sure. So if we look at the bite data, what we saw is that a bite is attributed to either a loose owned dog, an owned kind of contained dog, or a stray dog.
Stray dog.
And you see that the risk is growing from dogs that are perceived to be loose owned, you know, somebody else's dog in an open setting. And so that tells us that the biggest threat is from loose owned dogs. At the same time, in our census efforts, what we saw and what we perceived were that the majority of those loose dogs are in fact owned by people. And so I think your question is, you know, where is the threat? Is it loose owned versus stray? And we would say that the bigger risk is loose owned. You know, surely there probably are stray dogs, but loose owned are the ones that are resulting in bites that are growing at the fastest rate.
This is the data that we jumped over quickly earlier, right, which shows exactly that, which is, you know, overall bites are growing at 15%, but loose-owned bites are growing at 23%. And I think that was what Ms. Young was trying to get at earlier, which we definitely do see. The bigger issue is it's owned dogs. These are people's dogs that are biting. These are not strays.
I would just add, when we first started doing our benchmarking of how other cities talked about dogs, they, you know, other cities are not as focused on whether a dog is loose owned or just loose. So there's a, you know, there's loose dogs and they're owned dogs, and sometimes there are loose strays, but really it's just if a dog is loose, a dog is loose. And that's, you know, loose dogs, whether someone, you know, keeps them at night or just feeds them occasionally or, you know, has had that dog for a long time, that's the public safety threat, regardless of if someone has a claim of ownership or not.
You're correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen. I think we're the only city that actually measures the distinction, or one of the few cities that measures the distinction between the two.
The distinction didn't come up in our other benchmarks, but I can't say with certainty.
And you spoke about other cities in comparison. How long have they had their programs in place that were similar to what we were trying to enact?
So there's a very wide spectrum. I mean, there are certain cities that, you know, don't have programs in place, and there are ones like Austin that have really, you know, already executed their programs. I would say in general a lot of the focus on this topic has been over the last decade or two decades. But there's a lot of variance across cities, okay, along where they are in their journeys.
One of the things I would recommend, I think Austin has this program, and I understand that we have the same program in helping individuals to be able to repair their fence when we find occurrences for owned loose dogs. And I would like to see that program reinstituted. I believe it was more of a grant, a donation type program. So hopefully as we talk about the community wanting to help, animal community, they can help us get that program up, back, and going, and also incorporate that with our rental properties as well to make sure those properties are up to code with that. We talked about how to go about fixing this, and we understand that this is not I think someone said the city of Dallas can't be the only one, can't do it by ourselves, and we understand that not only it talks about the animal community, but the community. And I want to ask the audience, kind of give an example. If you're in the audience and you're not part of a animal organization, that you're just a concerned citizen, that you're here to hear about the report, raise your hand. Not part of an organization. Okay, exactly. What's one of the things that also talked lightly about in the plan is our commitment for the community to be engaged, the engagement of the community, and we understand that this won't be solved by us, it won't be solved alone by the organization. The community has to be engaged. Their input have to be given. And I know that a lot of that input, often I've heard, goes on, well, we hear it, but our postal service, our postal men and women are basically, if you will, on the front lines every day delivering mail, but they're the ones that are encountering their own dogs. And that information, I think, needs to be included, and they are a great point of resource of information regarding that, which leads us to our prioritization. And I've heard some discussion about, yes, we do have Fair Park, yes, we do have officers, but I think this is a great opportunity for us, particularly for my constituents in the southern sector. This needs to be a priority. Again, I've said it before, it's a quality of life issue when you can't walk or run or exercise without having to carry a weapon, if you will, just to be able to do that in your community, whereas in your report, out of the 136 dogs that you observed, one was north, and that one appeared to be kept. It just was loose. So it's a glaring quality of life issue that has to be addressed. I think that as a city, particularly I know from my colleagues, because we get beat up every meeting, every budget season. What are we going to do about the dogs? And one of the things that I'm surprised it hadn't been said, pick up the dogs is something that was stressed when we first came on the council. So I'm glad to see this report here and that it stresses the idea not only picking up the dogs but doing what we can to make sure that they're saved and that we are lowering, at the same time lowering our kill ratio, but as well as we're picking up the animals. Love the idea that we actually have facts. And I want to say that I told you so, we told you so, we told you so. So this just gives us credibility in what our constituents have been saying for years, what we've written about, the loss of life, unfortunately, the many stories on dog bites, that we actually have the factual proof. And I'm hoping that my colleagues will rally around this, city manager, Mr. Gonzalez, that we are, again, you've heard it time and time again, make this a priority so that this one thing that we can improve the quality of life for our residents, so that that's one less thing that we can say is wrong in our community, and it can be a positive as to what will increase the quality of life for residents and make individuals want to move back to the southern sector. So I want to stress that. And I know that there is enough blame to go around in this, from DAS to city staff to council. There's enough blame, so we can't blame just one person on it. I think we all have to fall on the sword for this. But I'm hearing a willingness from the city standpoint, a willingness to correct that moving forward now that it's put before us and it's evident and true, so that we can all come to a positive resolution on this and we can move forward from this. And before I go, I just want to say thank you to my Animal Advisory Commissioner, Ms. Stephanie Temko, for her tireless work and efforts on this. And before we go, my time is up, I just want to say one more thing in terms of animals. I want to make sure that this is clear and as we go through this. In my district, in District 8, we have, I would say, as you heard, Orange is the New Black. We have horses is a new dog in my district. So I want to make sure that that is being addressed as we go through and look at what codes or what statutes we need to change and how we address horses. I know it wasn't on the study, but trust me, I have horses that are just as big of a problem as dogs in my district. So we may want to bring you back for that study. Okay, so look forward to that. Peter, can you help me with that? Thank you.
Right after the mall's done.
Oh, and before I go, just in a spirit of showing unity and showing that we're serious about this, Ms. Young has been gracious enough to host us in her district with Councilman Thomas and Councilwoman Arnold and myself. We're going to host a joint community meeting on animals regarding this report to get community input, because I think it's very important that we include the community's input on this. So as we go within the next 30 days of this, we'll bring to you our community input, and everyone's invited to come to give their input, their solutions. Of course, many heads are better than one, so we don't want this to be a top-down project. We want to include the community on this. It will be on September the 12th at the Park South YMCA starting at 6:30. Again, that will be on September 12th at the Park South YMCA starting at 6:30. We welcome you to come, my other colleagues as well. So if you want to come and give your input, it would be great to show our support of solidarity. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Broski. And we can't say enough thanks to our Animal Advisory Commission. So I want to say thank you for what you voluntarily do for each and every one of our citizens in the city of Dallas. Do we have all the board members that are here, will you please stand? Animal Advisory Commission members, thank you so much. Thank you all very much. And thanks to the former members also, because I know that they spent a lot of time working on this. I think one of the comments that was mentioned is that we need to be able to share with this with the staff. And I want to say thank you to the staff, because as they talked about not enough sources, not enough information, not enough. And I think that the whole staff in the city of Dallas sometimes doesn't have enough to be able to work with us. And that's something that we need to look at. So I want to say from the top, Ms. Jones, thank you, and all their staff for everything that you all do. We need to make sure that we talk about how we want to continue in not only supporting, but also working together to be able to make it happen. We have some information that we were provided, so we want to make sure that we say thank you. We can't say thank you enough. As they mentioned, I want to make sure that I share this, because both DAS and SPCA are in the areas of
of a particular district that I think it's important they're not too far from each other. I think DAS, SPCA will eventually turn into LUV. And I know that it's something that we want to talk about because we want to make sure that it's not only them but all the others that you mentioned and how we can come together to be able to see how we can improve and do better. And I think the first start is being able to have a good conversation, good communication. And I know that everyone is willing to do that. I know that for whatever reason, we know we have the info. Let's see how we can work together to be able to make it happen. And I think it starts with that conversation. So I personally look forward to be able to be a part of that as well because I think it starts with us, and then it goes on to our constituency because that's who put us here. So with that, colleagues, I do know that you all had some I did want to share with you all that our information starts, or I should say the some of the points starts with wanting to see what we're going to do from here. And if you want to share that, I wanted to let you know that the amendments for the budget are due September 1st, 2016 at Mr. Gonzalez's office at 5 p.m. So if you have an amendment that you want to share in regards to the budget. So if nothing else, it is now 11:41 a.m. on this August 30th, 2016, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for coming.